This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Good to be with you today. Welcome back from the Independence Day holiday weekend. Hope you had a nice weekend. We'll get to a lot of things today. I'm going to bring in Michael Broadcorp. I know this story broke when I was on vacation, actually, but there has been a judgment and punishment handed down to Michelle McDonald, the Supreme Court, the perennial Supreme Court nominee for the Republican Party. But it's been interesting. There's a long story there, obviously. Michael Broadcorp, missinginminnesota.com, the story of the Grazini Rucki kids and the insanity with that and how it's played out on a lot of different levels. Needless to say, we're going to have Michael on a little bit later on to get some closure, it sounds like, a little bit in the Michelle McDonald issue. Plus, hopefully, Senator Susan Kent with some, of course, we'll get eventually here to the crazy stuff here. But Patrick joining us. Patrick, it's time for some professional radio broadcasting, if you may. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota studios here at AM 950, it's the Matt McNeil Show. There we go. How about that? Thank you very much, Rudy Luther Toyota, of course, sponsoring the radio station. I want to touch on really quick, there is that story that came out. Apparently some Toyota executives are donating to Republicans who supported the big lie. And I just want to make sure I'm very clear about one thing, because there are some people that are like, oh, Matt, now what? Well, first of all, if you think if you're trying to compare corporate executives of Toyota to one of the dealerships that they own, you don't understand how that system works. That has nothing to do with each other. Second of all, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but Rudy Luther Toyota has a fairly diverse media presence here in the metro area, which we are part of. And they have been sponsoring progressive radio in the Twin Cities for about 8 years now. So if you want to act like all of a sudden there's something there, come on, get a grip, okay? And thirdly, I want to make sure everyone hears this. I, Matt McNeil, I will own a Toyota for the rest of my life from Rudy Luther Toyota because I love those vehicles. They drive great. People donate. I'm not going to sit there at $50,000 and say, oh my God, come on. Get a grip. They have been here. They're great supporters of this station. They, once again, part of a large, diverse media presence here in the metro area. We're glad to be part of it. But they help sponsor AM 950, and they have for a while. So when that story broke, Patrick, I got to tell you, I was up north, and all of a sudden I was like, people like, oh, Matt, what are you going to do now? Maybe go buy a brochure and look for my next Sienna because I love those things. I'm going to drive one. It's driving a lazy boy. I'm sorry. I'm going to own a Sienna for the rest of my life. I love those cars, man. And I might get one of – they got some electrics coming out here I'm really excited about. So I'm glad to have them on board. And once again, we are broadcasting live right now. You are as well, Patrick. The Rudy Luther Toyota Studios here at AM 950.
It's a pleasure to be part of it. Of course, if you're looking for something a little smaller, a lot of great Camrys, Corolla selections at Rudy Luther as well.
Yeah, and they're going to be getting, of course, in their service department, great stuff. So thank you very much, guys. So I want to make sure I say to that – I wanted two things I want to touch on just really briefly here, okay? Before I get into something I really want to get into today. But first of all, there was a report last night that someone in Uptown had torched the dumpsters behind Stella's Fish restaurant there, where, of course, there was the U.S. Marshal shooting that was associated that happened there. And I understand, okay, right now there's a lot of people that are lost. The people that want to keep the way things are the same had a plan in place to basically get the police to where they're not really responding and make it seem like the police are needed far more because they don't – I'm sorry. Police don't really seem to be responding to anything out there, even though there's not really this massive staffing drop. It's not like 300 cops are off the force. We're down like 40 cops. But yet, police don't seem to be anywhere. And I think this is by design. So that crime, and it seems like the police have kind of informed people, oh, yeah, you want to you know, do stuff. We're not going to be out there. It seems like they're letting everyone go. It's becoming a trouble out there. Crime is taking off. So they wanted basically to make it seem like, well, you'd better be asking for twice as many police, and the next time, thank us for shooting you, that sort of thing. You have clearly leadership that's been compromised, whether that's the mayor, the city council, who are all big talk last May and June and have been picked apart by piranhas, dragging them in 15 different directions. And they are, and by design, they've got, I mean, the people that are wanting to keep things the way they are, where cops have no rules, no regulations, that they can do whatever they want, that they can shoot anyone they want, and there's, you say, thank you, sir, may I have another. The people that are like that, they went into action, and they brought people in who were not from the city to basically seem like, we're grassroots people. They went into community organizations and basically had the community organizations started undermining them. And they basically went into the city council and this to undermine them. To say, well, you don't really want to do this, do you? So there's a failure of leadership in the political positions. But I want to also say that frustration because that the police are behaving the way they are and the politicians that the way they are, it's permeated down to the protesters now, where there is, seems to be no, it used to be, we, for a long time, there was a real, you know, united effort here to make change happen. And now it seems to be splintering off and people are getting more and more frustrated. And you get people who are kidnapping, holding against their will city council members and demanding they bring them dinner. What the hell is that, Riddler? Yeah, that's just stupid. I mean, guy, you lost a lot of support when you knuckleheads did that. And I have no problem saying that. You guys lost a lot of support from a lot of people when you absolute boneheads decided to do that move. But now, here's a restaurant that doesn't have anything to do with what the U.S. Marshals did. But out of frustration, people are torching their dumpsters. Shutting down Stella's isn't going to do anything. See, they wanted this to happen. They want you disorganized. They want you just basically lashing out like anything else. They want the city council and the mayor basically ineffectual in their leadership. And they want the police to basically go on out there and make people regret that they ever doubted him. And they're winning because you're getting played. Doesn't help. I understand. It's frustrating. But right now, if we had actual leaders that were willing to stand by what they wanted to do at the beginning of all this, when George Floyd was murdered by four police officers in South Minneapolis, well, we would actually have change going on. Instead, because of wishy-washiness and hem and hawing, and because of a concerted effort by the Minneapolis police and the people that want to keep the police basically to where they can gun down anyone at any time with no consequences, we've got this situation where the protesters are now starting to turn into just ambling mob that doesn't seem to have any cohesion or any kind of sense to what they're doing. Don't go do that. Come on. You got to think through this a little bit. At one point, we were a powerful movement, and now we're just a movement. And that's just that. And it's just, it's it doesn't help that you don't have leaders that are standing by people. I'll be the first to say that. I have been wildly disappointed with a lot of people in Minneapolis City Council and the mayor. I have been wildly disappointed. But at the same time, I'm looking at this whole thing and I'm saying, you guys got played because when the second this happened, people went into motion to basically make sure this was the outcome, and you guys have fallen into their game. And good luck getting out of it. But don't go after Stella's. Don't be burning down their dumpsters. What are you doing? Stop it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I also will say, can I say a big stop it? So I went out, Patrick, on Saturday night, the 3rd. And I drove out. Have you ever been out to beautiful New Germany, Minnesota?
I have.
Ah, it's delightful. Although, is every bar in that town closed? With a town like New Germany, that can't be going over well. I've been to Germany. I was stationed there for 3 years. They like their beer. I'm just going to let you know. I saw a lot of fireworks going off. It was interesting because I went out to New Germany and then went down to Waconia and zipped back that way. And over rural Minnesota, I saw a lot of fireworks going off, big fireworks too. Some people private, some, you know, kind of public stuff. I mean, some looks like a little more organized. A lot of it over land. And then you had some people that had some fires. So you got to be careful out there. It's got the rain coming through. I'm glad to see that. But that was a little scary. But then there is this story. My God, the shooting of a boy in St. Louis Park on the 4th of July was likely a result of a celebratory gunfire, according to police. What are you, Yosemite Sam, you idiot? A celebratory gunfire. Morons. The boy suffered a non-life-threatening gunshot wound to the arm in the incident at 3322. This is at Keela Park, right off of Minnetonka Boulevard, at 1044 on Sunday. While the incident is under investigation, the city provided an update Thursday that suggests the shooting was not malicious. Well, that's nice to know that the young child doesn't have any already blood enemies. It's unlikely that it was a deliberate act with the intent to cause harm and is more likely connected to reckless behavior in conjunction with 4th of July celebrations. Although the fact related to this particular incident are still being investigated, this is a good reminder about the dangers of firing bullets into the air with outcomes that can cause serious injury or even death. Really? If you don't understand what that thing can do in your frickin' hands, you moron, you should not have one. And if you are ever engaging in celebratory gunfire, you should never have a spoon, let alone a gun. Don't worry, the Republicans in the state will make sure you get 50 of them because they're idiots. But you shouldn't because you don't understand what you're playing with. 952-946-6205. For good, celebratory gunfire. Patrick, are we ready, perchance? Ready to go? All right, folks, here we go. It's time for Head Executioner Paul Gazelka. That's the Republicans in the Senate being marched in right now, yes. Gotta bring out your dead here.
Bring out your dead.
There we go. There we go. Bring out your dead. It is, and you might say, hey, Matt, that's pretty glib. Yeah, it is, but that's for the Republican Party of today. Head executioner Paul Gazelka today. That's going to be his theme song for the time being. In case you missed it, they got done with a special session, passed all the bills that were going to get passed, and then Paul Gazelka said, guess what? And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that Governor Walz took the wind out of his sails on in regards to he relinquished his emergency powers and frantically. Remember, I was mentioning how the Republicans were desperately saying, well, no, he didn't do it. The legislator voted. Well, no, he basically cleared the path because he got all the funding from the feds for 3 months so that we didn't have to worry about that. And so he said, yeah, I'll step aside. I got the money from the feds. And so he was done. And so the Republicans, and there's a quirk in the state government here that allows the Republicans to, they get to basically confirm, the Republicans in the Senate confirm the commissioners, and they haven't really confirmed the commissioners. The Governor Walz's commissioners, these are people that run the individual agencies. And once again, ran these agencies through the pandemic, but now because Paul Gazelka desperately wants to win some sort, he's losing to Scott Jensen on the Republican gubernatorial primary. If he does run, it sounds like he's running. He's losing to Dr. Scott Jensen on there because Jensen's going out and dealing with all the loon bins that basically nominate Republicans. So he came up with this idea: we're going to fire a bunch. And it's not my term. Execute's not my term. Execute was Kurt Daut, the House Minority Leader. He said, looks like executions are beginning in the Senate. He's the one that used executioner. So I'm just going with what the other Republicans are calling you, Paul. Head executioner, Paul Gazelka. So, now, we did this last year. I don't know if you remember. In September of last year, with little notice, Walls of Senate Republicans on Friday fired Department of Commerce Commissioner Steve Kelly after voting down the Department of Labor Industry Commissioner Nancy LePink last month. Both were on the job 18 months and not received an up or down vote. Now, I bring that up because I want to. There's an important element of that story. I don't know if you remember, but initially what was going to happen was Peterson was ag, Olson was higher education, and Kelly was going to – it sounded like all the men were going to get confirmed in the commissioner votes back then in 2020. And it seemed like Johnson, who is a woman who is on mediation – and LePink, who is a woman, were the ones that are going to get voted down. And we immediately said, okay, this is a really interesting optic, isn't it? You're voting to approve all the male commissioners, but at the same time, you're voting to basically fire the female commissioners. Someone must have gotten to Gazelka at that point. They made the decision to approve Johnson as mediation, so it didn't look so bad, and they got rid of Kelly, so you couldn't have that narrative. But almost immediately this morning, and basically, I'm following a few different – where most of this stuff is coming down is on in regards to Peter Callahan and John Croman and Brianna Beerspach. They're out there. So right away this morning, this is the first thing. Peter Callahan from MinnPost puts this out. There are six Walls appointments being considered by GOP-controlled Senate this week. It appears likely that the three men will be confirmed and three women will not be confirmed. He didn't think there would be three more non-confirms this week, perhaps just one. So he's going to go this week at least and basically dangle these people out there. And so the question was whether or not he was going to follow through. And I said, okay, good luck with that. I mean, if that's the narrative, if that's the optic you're going to go with, that you're going to look at, and this is once again, this is Peter Callahan at MinnPost saying that this is what kind of, he got the impression from Gazelka, that the three women were going to be fired and the three men were going to be confirmed. Wow. Yeah, thanks for writing campaigns ads for us, Paul. Hey, you chicky poos, you're a little out of your league being a commissioner here, you know. We're going to let you go. This is man's work. We're going to let the men do this. Well, clearly someone must have gotten to him because there have been some changes on that. I will get to that. There's a lot of things that have been developing in regards to who is going to get confirmed and who is not. We'll take a break. Come on back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Your phone calls welcome. It's Paul Gazelka, head executioner. We'll continue right here on AM 950. Oh, dear Lord, is Gazelka just a weasel? He's just a weasel. So, okay, so here we are. Now, the four names of commissioners today that have been brought up have been Bishop at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, Stroman at the DNR, Ho at the Housing, and Phillips at the IRRB. Now, once again, the impression from Peter Callahan at MinnPost was that Gazelka was saying the three women, the three chicky poos, apparently. I'm just going to paraphrase how I think I'm going to guess how Gazelka, because this is the second time he's done this where it seems like he's targeting the women commissioners and someone, I'm going to guess the female senators of the Republican caucus are coming back saying, no, do you want us to win any suburban seats for God's sakes? Are coming back. So let me go through each individual because there's been some action on all of them to a point. First of all, Phillips is the IRRB. He's the dot guy. He got confirmed. So he's confirmed now. It's been a little interesting in regards to two of the other ones here. Looking at the DNR commissioner, Sarah Stroman, who was effusively praised by the State Environmental and Natural Resources Committee Chair, Kerry Rood. So she seems safe now. My guess would be is that Kerry Rood is saving the Republican Party from themselves because, once again, they do not want a situation where all of a sudden the female commissioners from Governor Walls are being shot down while the male ones are getting confirmed. So she seems to be stepping in, although it is very interesting. Someone noticed Senator Kerry Rood's Twitter account immediately disactivated after all of this praise for the DNR – The DNR commissioner. So that one, at least on the face, seems okay. But we should be very clear. We've had Republicans once again, like Scott Jensen, when I brought him up earlier. He was the champion of the Alex Smith insulin bill, and he ended up voting in against it because Republicans told him he had to do that. Peter Callahan comes back and says, hard to read the Minnesota Senate housing on confirmation of Commissioner Jennifer Ho. Lots of questions about rent the LPMN.org, but it wasn't overly aggressive. At the end, Chair Rich Dreheim said, let's enjoy the rest of summer. Had earlier said that his decision on confirmation was above my pay grade. So basically he's saying, it sounds like, it's hard to read. It kind of sounds like he's like, okay, let's why are we doing this? And I don't think Rich Dreheim wants to be the guy that's the face of getting rid of another female commissioner while male commissioners are getting confirmed. So it once again, it sounds like that's the there's an interesting case there. But I did want to get back actually to the one that was definitely going to happen. And Gazelka now is trying to make it seem like, well, I never said I'd. Who made it seem like I was definitively against any commissioner? Well, apparently he had let – Gazelka had kind of let someone know in the Walz administration that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency Commissioner Laura Bishop, there's no chance she was going to survive. So she basically resigned. And I want to know the truth is I want to give her credit because I think this was the right way to go because I just do not think that there was any – like I said, I mean the Republicans desperately wanted to grandstand on this. And what she did is she did exactly what Walz did is that she took away the ability for them to grandstand. And I want to read – this was once again – this is her resignation letter. And there was two parts of it which I thought were quite interesting in regards to just what she had to say. The MPCA commissioner is a job that never wins a popularity contest, yet in my view is one of the most important roles in the cabinet. For many, the agency can never go far enough in our protections, while at the same time a segment of the Republican caucus will always believe the agency goes too far. Personally, I testified before the legislature representing the MPCA and the governor for 3 full legislative sessions and spent countless hours responding to any phone calls or questions. For 2 hours last August, I appeared before a joint Senate committee titled Reviewing the Job Performance of Minnesota Pollution Control Agency Commissioner Laura Bishop, the only commissioner to see such a review. Once again, women in the workplace, this is just a textbook example of how men treat you, isn't it? I mean, it is just disturbing. She's the only one, and she has to go through all this dog and pony show. Very reminiscent, if you ask me, very reminiscent of what the Republicans in the U.S. Senate and House made Hillary Clinton go through. She was the only one to get such a review. I left that committee feeling satisfied. I had answered all questions, understood the remaining concerns of lawmakers, and felt reassured when the Republican chair said she looked forward to continuing to work together. And while the administration's policies may not always see eye to eye with Republican lawmakers, there's never been a question related to my job performance or my qualifications. So she's basically calling them out, saying, hey, not only is this just these people are kind of always against the pollution control person, but at the same time, they also will go to the extreme of making the point of that, they singled me out, even though I took the time, answered all their questions, went and jumped through all their hoops. Gazelka put out a video on her resignation. There were a number of issues that kept bubbling up, and it was more political than anything. Once again, head executioner Paul Gazelka. We just felt like we had to address it. Well, once again, you hadn't addressed it with her because she basically said, I'd answer all your questions, and no one really said there was a problem. Gazelka says he can't say for sure how the confirmation would turn out. Shut up, you lying sack of crap. Dear God, Senator Gazelka, you knew exactly what it was. This was going to be your entire campaign. You were filming it for commercials. You were getting ready for, I stopped the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I got that chicky poo commissioner out of the way. That was what you were going to do, sir. You're sexist. And for God's sakes, all these people ran the government through the damn coronavirus pandemic. Just pathetic. You're getting your ass kicked by Scott Jensen, a guy that shouldn't be even keeping up with you. And so now you're getting pathetic. God. And the patheticness is permeating your brain, moron. Look what the optics you're doing. Firing all the women commissioners? God, Paul. And I know you'll sit there and say, she resigned. This is Gazelka. This is more Gazelka. I don't think she would have been. I guess we'll never know, he says. At this point, she stepped down. And I wish her well. No, dude, you knew she was toast. You knew she was ready to go. You are just giddy with this. Basically, Bishop said Gazelka told Governor Walz said she lacked the vote. So he's lying. He is outright lying again. And, dude, why do you keep targeting the women's commissioners? You've got some real issues, dude. Not only with your own kids, and I don't go down that road too often, but not only with your own kids, dude, because I mean, you're going to be this broken, I'm going to bring up all your brokenness. Not only do you have problems with your own family, you got some real issues. You need to go see a counselor. You know, okay, Midnight Oil, you need to go see a counselor. But this crud, come on. Dog and freaking pony show. That's all it is. Now, once again, Patrick, for anyone that was tuning in and was wondering why I was using the term chicky poos, I was using that in a way to criticize Paul Gazelka for his irrational stance towards female commissioners within the Walz administration. Because once again, I want to point out, Peter Callahan at MinnPost made the point that the plan was, apparently today, to fire the three women commissioners and approve the three male commissioners. Okay, good luck with that. Like I said, I think the female senators on the Republican side basically said, we're not going to let that happen because we want to win our suburban seats. We want to win these seats back at some point. All right, I got to take a break. Susan Kent will join us in the 5 o'clock hour to talk about this dog and pony show from Gazelka. But when we come on back, Michael Broadcorp, Michelle McDonald, developments on that with Missing in Minnesota. We'll get that in a second. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950 Radio, it's the Matt McNeil Show. Once again, more on Paul Gazelka, head executioner, coming up in a little bit with Senator Susan Kent. But right now, I wanted to bring the story up. This actually happened when I was on vacation, and I said, I got to get Michael on when I get back. Michael Broadcorp is missing in Minnesota. The girls are gone. Of course, he followed that long, arduous story, the Grazini Rocky story about the kids that were kidnapped. It's a long story. I highly encourage you to follow missinginminnesota.com, as well as get the book, The Girls Are Gone. It's a fantastic book. While I was gone, Michelle McDonald, who was legally involved at various points with this case of the Ruckies and stuff, there had been some developments there, but I'm going to get out of the way here. Michael Broadcorp, kind enough to join us today to talk about that ruling that happened last week. Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
Great to be on here. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for the time, and I'm glad you had a positive result here. Let's go back to what happened last week. Her law license, Michelle McDonald. Now, this has been a perennial candidate for the Republican Party to run for the Minnesota Supreme Court. Her law license was indefinitely suspended. Talk about what happened there.
Yes. In Michelle McDonald has been a perennial candidate for the Minnesota Supreme Court. But in June of 2018, as Allison Mann and I, who was my co-author on our award-winning book, The Girls Are Gone, which discussed this case, we were served with a lawsuit by Michelle McDonald. The lawsuit was frivolous. It was deemed frivolous by the Office of Lawyers Professional Responsibility. And the manner in which Michelle filed that lawsuit and some of the claims she made in that lawsuit went against how she could operate as a lawyer in Minnesota. Michelle had been previously suspended by the Minnesota Supreme Court because she had made untruthful statements about a judge who presided over a case involving Sandra Grazini-Ruckey. The lawsuit that she filed against Allison and I in Missing in Minnesota was fraudulent and violated what the lawyers board agreed with, violated rules governing licensed attorneys in Minnesota. So we filed Allison and I filed a complaint against the office, filed a complaint against Michelle with the Office of Lawyers Professional Responsibility. They accepted our complaint against Michelle and they started an investigation against Michelle. Around that same, a little bit after that time, Michelle appeared on a did a radio interview on another radio station, and she repeated some of the exact statements that got her previously disciplined before. We shared that with the lawyer's board, and we filed, and we wrote a story about it. Fast forward 3 years later, and the Minnesota Supreme Court ruled, based on our complaint, that Michelle's license should be indefinitely suspended by the Supreme Court. What that means to your listeners is this. It means for at least 4 months, Michelle McDonald is prohibited from practicing law in the state of Minnesota. What happens after 4 months is that she has to petition the lawyer's board, and there'll be a hearing on it to make a determination as to whether she has taken the additional steps that is needed to have her law license reinstated. Aside from that 4 month suspension, she has to retake parts of the state bar exam. She has to pay a small fee. But the biggest change for Michelle is that, unlike previous disciplinary matters where she was, you know, suspended before she gets her license back, there will, in essence, be a hearing, a review of whether she's actually done the things that she needs to do and whether she's, in essence, for lack of a better phrase, going to conduct herself professionally if she gets her law license back. So a four-month suspension could actually be a lot longer. So it's a big win that we got.
I want to make sure that the Supreme Court, and this is the Supreme Court, did take this very seriously. The candidates she ran against, now she's lost every one of her races, but the candidates on the Minnesota Supreme Court that she's run against actually recused themselves from this ruling. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
Yes.
So her most recent opponents that are still on the court, she's run four times for the Supreme Court. And so her two most recent opponents recuse themselves. She's, in fact, just in January of this year, she announced that she's going to run again. So she is already an announced candidate for 2022. So this should be her fifth run for the Supreme Court. But there might be some problems with her running.
Yeah, because I want to get to that as well here. Because I want to just say this. The Supreme Court did take this very seriously. The Minnesota Supreme Court did, because they did not want anyone coming back saying conflict or interest like this. When you describe the hurdles that she has to get back to, it does not sound like by the end of this year there's a potential she could be a lawyer again. It sounds like, from all the stuff that's going to have to happen, and as you described the process here just to get this, the 3 years from when you filed this to the ruling, it to me it sounds like, and I don't know how judicial processes like this work, but it would sound to me like this is going to be well into late into 2022 or maybe even 2023 before it's resolved whether she can have her law license back. I know that's a speculation, but does that sound like the timeline you're dealing with something like this?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Michelle was previously suspended in 2018, and she was suspended for 60 days, and then she was on probation for 2 years. When she filed the lawsuit against Allison and I, she was still on probation from her previous disciplinary matter. But the change this time around is in 2018, all she had to do was basically sit on the bench for 60 days. And once that 60-day was over, and she had to comply, she had to take portions of the bar exam again and stuff like that. But after that 60-day timeout was over, as long as she did those other things, she was immediately reinstated. Now what the Supreme Court is saying is this: we're going to make you sit out for 4 months. We're going to have you take portions of the bar exam again, just like you did in the past. All the time frame is different. But what you're going to have to do this time is you're going to have to petition, and your license will stay suspended until it's determined that you should have it reinstated. I'm not a lawyer. I haven't played one on TV.
Okay.
So the way this was explained to me was, it's kind of like she has to go through a probation hearing. So before she gets her license back, she's going to have to go through this process of where people are going to have to, and there's potentially for another hearing in front of the Supreme Court and a whole host of things. So it is very unlikely that Michelle, so as it was explained to me, let's say in 4 months she applies, it will take months upon months for that additional process to go. Why that's so important in this process is that that prolongs her suspension, but it also does this. In Minnesota, in order to run to be a county attorney, to be a district court judge, court of appeals, or on the Supreme Court, you have to be a licensed attorney. You have to be knowledgeable in the law. And courts in Minnesota have determined or have drawn that in order to be learned in the law means you have to be a licensed attorney. So if you run for county attorney, district court judge, or Supreme Court, you have to provide, aside from your filing fee, you have to provide a copy of your active law license. If Michelle is suspended and she doesn't have an active law license, she cannot run for the Supreme Court again, which will be fantastic. Because as I discussed, having written a book about Michelle's legal involvement in a case involving the disappearance of missing kids, plus then being sued by Michelle, as I was. Michelle McDonald, as I noted on Twitter, she is an abscess on the face of the legal community in Minnesota. She is a carbuncle. She is just a hive of problems, and she has no business serving in a judicial capacity in any way. That includes being a lawyer. And Minnesota, Matt, you've been so gracious to have Alice, to talk about this story.
My pleasure.
You probably have been the best in the Twin Cities in all of the media that we've had on this. But these down ballot races were usually focused on the United States Senate or governor or congressional races. These down ballot races, particularly these races for the Supreme Court, are incredibly important. And mm-hmm. I can't begin to describe to you how concerned Minnesotans should be if Michelle McDonald ever wore a black robe and was on the Supreme Court. It would be monstrous.
Hashtag carbuncle. I'm giving that one to you a little bit later on there, Mike.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Because it is, like you said, it is an interesting process. And you and I both, when I think about organizations or specific industries where the internal review process is the most stringent, lawyers and NASA, those are the two that basically they don't rush anything. And because in the case of NASA, obviously what they're doing, but in the case of lawyers, because they want to make sure the people that are representing people are qualified to do that. You're right. I don't see this breaking through. Although I will say, on a personal note, for the quality of my show, I will miss a fifth term for her running again if she doesn't run, yeah. Because she's always just – it's just a clown car brigade with her campaigns. And I got to imagine the Republican Party is probably actually somewhat happy that they might actually not have their candidate derailed by derailed by Michelle McDonald this time around.
Yeah, I mean, she was endorsed by the Republican Party when she ran in 2014.
Yeah.
She attempted to be endorsed in 16. When she ran in 16 – she got in trouble for lying about whether she had been endorsed by Republicans.
Yeah, that's right.
She is just, and so this is someone who has not only been disciplined multiple times by the Lawyers Professional Responsibility Board, she has also been cited by the Office of Administrative Hearings for knowingly violating Minnesota campaign finance laws related to endorsements and the Minnesota Fair Campaign Practices Act related to being dishonest about endorsements. She is a troublesome candidate. And I think if you're going to run to be a judge and help enforce the laws and be there, you should learn to follow the laws yourself. And this lawsuit that she filed against myself, Missing in Minnesota, and Allison was nothing more than an attempt to intimidate us, to stop us from reporting and to silence our reporting. And thankfully, we were not bullied by her. We were patient. It took 3 years. The wheels of justice do move slowly, but we have a situation of where someone who is an absolute menace to the legal community is going to have to sit out for a considerable length of time and may possibly never get her license back.
One thing, final thing I want to bring up here is, and I want for you to kind of touch this from your personal perspective, because as we talk about this, we're talking about this a little bit more of in a news thing, but I want to talk about it in a personal thing. You get sometimes where a person comes after you legally, coming after Allison legally, and you, the first thing you do is you go back and you check, dot your I's and you cross your T's, and oh, no, we didn't do this. And then you have this long process there. And I know that Michael, you and Allison probably have been living under a cloud of stress for years here. You get to this. I want you to talk about the relief you're feeling here when you get to that Minnesota Supreme Court ruling, that the fact that that this is now being lifted, that you know you were right, that you basically don't have to live under this scourge, and you realize you know things are moving forward and at least much more in a positive way.
It feels great. I mean, it was a huge validation multiple times throughout this process, both at the district court level, at the appellate court level, and with the Office of Lawyers Professional Responsibility. The writing, the work Allison and I did was constantly validated as being accurate, constantly validated as being truthful, but it really exposed Michelle. It is a tremendous relief to know that someone who, without any question, used, abused, and misused her license and her authority as a lawyer the way that she did, she was punitive, she targeted us directly. She, at one point, tried to get, you know, my homeowner's insurance policy. She wanted to come after my home. She wanted to do all this stuff. And it takes an incredible amount of intestinal fortitude and a backbone to stand up to someone like that. But when that order came in and her license was suspended, I will say it was also an important lesson for my children, which I talked to them about. I said, look, I said, sat them down and I said, this is the importance of standing up to bullies sometimes.
Yep, indeed.
And
yes.
even as an adult, we sometimes have to stand up to bullies. And I said, she was a bully. She picked on me. She picked on Allison. She picked on Missing in Minnesota. And now she's lost her law license because she did it. And that should be a lesson to other bullies out there.
This whole story, and once again, I cannot recommend the book The Girls Are Gone more. The story is unbelievable. It's true. It's unbelievable. It's true. And there are so many different threads in this. It's, I mean, they could do like an Encyclopedia Britannica kind of version of this with multiple books in the series. It is amazing. I want everyone to get the book The Girls Are Gone, Missing in Minnesota. That's where you're keeping up to date with this, and you can go back in the timeline there and see all the news stories that Michael has been covering on this for years on this, Allison as well. I highly encourage you to get the book, visit the website. Michael, I am very happy because you just said it. Standing up to bullies is something I respect 100%. You guys have done a great job with this book. This is just top-notch reporting on the – this is A-plus reporting, period. I've enjoyed every element of this. You always got my support on this one. When the next development happens in this story, you are more than welcome
happen,
to come back.
My friend.
You are more than welcome to come back to this show, okay?
I want to just thank you and your listenership and AN950. Allison and I, throughout this entire journey, long before we even started the book, you've always been helpful. You've always made time for us. And I just want to thank you and your listeners for that opportunity again.
My pleasure. Michael Broadcorp, The Girls Are Gone, missinginminnesota.com. Follow it there, and you can read the latest news updates there. Michael Broadcorp, kind enough to join us. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Yes, Michael Broadcorp. That story is nuts. If I was to write that for the Lifetime Movie Network, no one would even believe it there. Hallmark wouldn't take that one. That story just keeps going on and on and on. And you could hear it in Michael's voice. He just the finally getting some resolution there. Although I'm not going to be surprised if – would I be surprised if Michelle McDonald sued the state to say no, that the – that I should be able to run for the Supreme Court without a law license. It sounds like it's pretty cut and dry in the law, and I wonder if it's actually in the Constitution, which would make it almost impossible for her to overturn. But you know, it is. I would not be surprised. I mean, I think that's especially it looks like it's going to be well past the 2022 election, and she's not going to have her law license back, or she wouldn't have it back enough time because I think, okay, so let's think about this process-wise. She has to provide the law license prior to being listed on the ballot. So I'm going to guess, would that be August of next year? Would probably be around, right? If there's a decent chance she's not going to have it by August of next year, would she file a lawsuit to basically try to prevent or try to allow herself to be added on to a ballot under that guise? I don't know. That would be an interesting question there. What's funny is this, is David Brower, who, of course, he's a journalist here in town. He writes about the fact that there is another Republican has vowed to go run for the attorney general spot. And here is Holloweekend, but it mentioned the latest Minnesota AG candidate announcement story that Torgerson was suspended from legal practice for a pattern of violations. How in the world has the Republican Party gotten into this problem where it seems like almost every candidate they have for a Minnesota Supreme Court seat or the attorney general is, has got all this baggage of bad legal problems on their side? I mean, on the Minnesota DFL side, to become a candidate for a legal position, once again, as the county attorneys or the appellate court or something like that, or Supreme Court or attorney general, your legal record has to be just brilliant. It cannot have a smidge on it. But the Republicans, it's almost like, oh, I keep failing at being a lawyer. Well, I guess I'll be the attorney general. And they let them, and they get close. Michael's right about one thing. Do not ignore these secondary races on these ballots, man. Thank God Paul Thiessen won last time against Michelle McDonald. But, I don't think she's going to be gone for long. Hour two, that's up next with Senator Susan Kent. Broadcasting live from the AM 950 Rudy Luther Toyota Studios, it's the Matt McNeil Show on your Tuesday. Good to have you with us back after the holiday. It has been, once again, a sad day. Once again, I want to be very clear. Kurt Dowd, the House Minority Leader, labeled what the Senate's doing to these commissioners as execution. So head executioner Paul Gazelka, the Senate Majority Leader, has been targeting Governor Walz's commissioners after they served most of their term and through the pandemic out of pettiness and spite after the special session all the bills got passed. He's keeping the Senate open because it's just a dog and pony show to try to help his potential gubernatorial race. That's all this is. Well, needless to say, there's been a lot of action today as Paul Gazelka not only goes after the commissioners, but seems to be specifically targeting the female commissioners, which we'll get to as well here in just a moment. The Senate Minority Leader is one of my favorite politicians in the state of Minnesota. Senator Susan Kent is kind enough to join us to talk about this absolute dog and pony show going on by Paul Gazelka and the Senate Republicans. Senator, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Well, hey, Matt, anything going on?
Not much. Hey, I should mention there is a severe thunderstorm watch for southern Minnesota, but that's not going to affect us right now. That's basically Red Wing South. So just FYI, if you're heading down that way, just keep that in mind. But no, we've just got pathetic showers up here in regards to Paul Gazelka. I messaged you because it became clear. I think when Governor Walz made the decision, he got that great deal with the federal government to get the food aid for 3 months, I think it was. And basically he said, well, I got what I needed, so I don't need to have emergency powers anymore. Gazelka, who clearly wanted to rescind those powers as a launching pad for his potential gubernatorial campaign, was furious. So all of a sudden comes the return of Paul Gazelka's executioner's row, where he's trying to take out Governor Walz's commissioners. He announces they're going to have hearings on them. The Senate has not approved them. These people have served most of their term. They have gone through the pandemic, and now he's trying to put the state's government in chaos. Just the mere process. Let's start there. The mere process of doing this, it's almost like he wants to make the state work as inefficiently as possible for the last year to try to make a case that he deserves to be governor.
It's pretty amazing, Matt, I have to say. And when you track back with what he's done, so, we ended up being in special session for 2.5 weeks to get the budget passed,
yes,
which was too long. It should not have taken that long. He even said it should be 10 days and we'd be done, but it went beyond that. And then, you know, last Thursday morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, after we passed the tax bill, he said, well, you know, we're concerned Governor Walz won't sign the tax bill, so we're going to come back in Friday morning, trust but verify, and then some mention about the bonding bill. Meanwhile, the House had already adjourned sine die, which means we're not coming back. And so the Senate can't pass bills, with some exceptions, if the House isn't there. And so we can continue to meet, but really the only thing we can do is take up these executive appointments. And so it became clear once the tax bill was signed and we were coming back in, and he and I did have a conversation about it on that Thursday evening, that that's what they were doing. And so that was Friday morning, and that was a little tense.
Yeah.
And I keep putting up the motion to adjourn sine die because we have no business doing this. The analogy I make is if you have a job where you're getting paid a salary, and so you're supposed to do your work during your working hours and get your salary, but you spend all day, you know, shopping online, talking to your friends, doing whatever, you're not getting your work done, so you work overtime and then somehow you get paid overtime. That's what he's trying to do. We have been able to do this for 3 sessions now. I mean, most of these folks were appointed in January of 2019 when Governor Walz was sworn in. And they have held these back and used them as a threat, as a political threat. And now it seemed like a convenient time to do this. And it cost taxpayers extra money to do it this way because, you know, extra security. Some members, you know, will get their per diem. They, you know, the ones who insisted on being here probably shouldn't take per diem. You know, those who are missing out on their jobs and are here against their will, that might be a different story. But it is just absolutely an abuse of the process, of the intent about the Senate's responsibility to advise and consent on these appointments. And it's just a dark day, in my opinion.
And I guarantee you, if a Republican takes the governor's mansion ever again, we need to fix this right away. But yeah, I think the cat's out of the bag at this point. I want to go back in time a little bit here. Last year, we had this happen last year where he very quickly went out there and canned Nancy LePink, the Department of Labor and Industry Commissioner. And it was, once again, if I remember correctly, he was going to also fire Johnson, the mediation person. But it almost seems as if some of the Republican senators went to him and said, okay, the optics on firing 2 female commissioners and then approving, I think it was at that point, at least 2 male, maybe 3 male, were not going to be good. They ended up firing a male commissioner, Steve Kelly, the commerce commissioner as well, but then improved Johnson as mediation along with Olson, and I believe Peterson have also been confirmed. So it was kind of weird. So once again, we had Paul Gazelka last year putting forward this idea, I'm going to fire the female commissioners and approve the male commissioners. We had Peter Callahan at MinnPost today. He seemed to be reporting that Gazelka was leaning towards firing the 3 female commissioners that had been that were potentially on the, what I guess you could say, chopping block for him, as he likes to say, that they were going to go after them specifically and approve the 3 male commissioners. The 3 female commissioners that were mentioned were Bishop at MPCA, Stroman at DNR, and Ho at Housing. It also seems like someone must have kind of come in here and realized, wow, the optics of us just firing female commissioners and approving male commissioners is not going to look good. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I don't think I'm missing something here. It does seem like, and once again, this is Peter Callahan at MinnPost reporting that he was going to fire the 3 female commissioners. It does seem like Paul Gazelka does seem to have an issue with female commissioners. I mean, it clearly does.
Well, it's been interesting to watch this unfold for sure, because that's what happened last year, exactly as you outlined it, that it became clear that the names that kept bubbling up were women.
Yes.
And then they quickly found some men they could talk about, so that it didn't seem, you know, well, that's what they did here. You know, they were very clear that, that they were mad at Laura Bishop, which let's remember too, Bill Ingebrigtsen, he's the one who drew the red line and said, if you don't get rid of this clean cars thing in the budget bills, then we're going to shut down state parks. And remember, that didn't go well for them either.
No.
There was a lot of pushback on that one. And so Senator Gazelka even said in recent weeks, you know what, we're not going to do that. That doesn't take effect until after the election. So this will be adjudicated in the elections. Well, he went back on that because, you know, he was going hard for Laura Bishop. I just think it's interesting because they had six people in these quote-unquote hearings because they're informational. They can't actually do anything because we're in special session and those committees don't officially exist. So there was three men and then the three women you mentioned. The three men, it's one commissioner and two other appointed positions, leadership positions. Non-controversial. You know, everybody knew these would be non-controversial. So they pulled up these easy, low-hanging fruit. We can all pass these three guys. And those were heard first. And then they were going to take up the three really capable women. And let's talk about what they're working on, right? So Commissioner Jennifer Ho, who is one of the most thoughtful, caring, she is so impressive. She has a bunch of experience in Washington with HUD, for example. Bunch of experience. We are so lucky to have her. And when you think about where we are, we've talked about the eviction moratorium and the challenges with housing even before the pandemic, but especially because of the pandemic. We're getting all this federal money to help people who've really been struggling. And she is really leading this process because she understands that she has these relationships. The thought of pulling her out of that job in this moment, that would be like the most incredibly stupid thing that the state of Minnesota could do.
Well, and I do want to mention, and Senator, if I may, I do want to mention as we go through these individuals, because there have been a little bit of developments there. It sounds like Rich Dreheim, the chair of that committee, he said, let's enjoy the rest of summer. I had earlier said this is above my pay grade, this decision to have this hearing. It's hard to read what's going to happen in that committee with Commissioner Ho, but at the same time, you're right. I mean, here she goes through, and once again, the experience of going through the pandemic, she's been able to lead that department through that. It does sound like, in the case of Dreheim here, it's like, I don't know if I really want to be part of this, because clearly the optics here, as we're pointing out, are really bad, that he definitely is going after these female commissioners. It does seem like the tone might be softening a little bit on Ho. Did you get that impression at all?
Yes, I did. And we were sort of trying to watch that, too. You know, the eviction moratorium and the housing bill has a timeline built into it. So they basically said, let's see how this goes over the next few months, and then we'll come back and revisit it, because we may be back in special session for a different issue in September. So I agree. I felt like that was a voice of reason. And let's be clear, you know, I mean, that was a tough negotiation. But, you know, that was one that really was done in a very bipartisan way. Commissioner was involved and engaged, and everybody was working together. And so I'm frankly not surprised that Senator Dreheim, having been through that whole thing, and that bill passed, it's not unanimously, overwhelmingly, because it was a solid compromise. Not everybody got what they wanted. But it was good, and it will help. It's not enough. We should be doing more, but, you know. And so that was one that seemed to be a bit of a ray of sunshine. And Commissioner Stroman from DNR, you know, from what I saw, you know, and Senator Rood, Chair Rood was very complimentary of some particular projects, particularly up in her district, and in their working relationship in general.
And if I may step in on that one as well here, because this is Sarah Stroman is the DNR commissioner. The Republican chair was very complimentary. As a matter of fact, I think that this is one that I think I'm willing to say she's going to get confirmed one way or the other. Because and let's just talk about the politics of this. I have to imagine Paul Gazelka does not represent a suburban Republican district. There's going to be redistricting. And these suburbanites are looking, okay, do you know how bad we got beaten last time by suburban, you know, the Democrats came in and took suburban women away from us? All of a sudden, you're just firing women left and right. I think there seems to be this undercurrent that I understand Paul Gazelka feels as if he has the Senate on his back if he does this gubernatorial race, but I think they're saying, okay, we have to look at trying to hold seats in the House and in the Senate eventually in 2024. So I think that Senator Rood, although her Twitter account is now deactivated. I think that's a little scary. But the fact that she basically was praising, I got the impression is we are not going to have a situation here where all the women get turned down and all the men get approved. And it seems like herself, that Senator, Senator Rood, is leading that charge to make sure this one at least gets approved through her committee.
Well, and I will say, Senator Rood, we don't agree on a number of things, as you can imagine, but I have a feeling that she is familiar with that good old boys club that she works in.
Yeah, I would say so, too. But then we have to bring up the bishop, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I actually think she took the right path because, let's face it, they wanted the vote. The Republicans wanted the vote. They wanted to basically say, we gotcha. And she beat them to the punch. She turns in her letter of resignation, basically takes points saying, hey, I've jumped through all the hoops you've asked me to. At no point have you criticized the job I'm doing, and walks out the door. Senator Gazelka today tried to play out there as a number of rules, but then he says, I don't think she would have been voted down today. I guess we'll never know. At that point, she stepped down. But Bishop said Gazelka had told Governor Walz she lacked the vote. So the reason why she resigned is Senator Gazelka had told the governor she was not going to get confirmed. Now Paul Gazelka is trying to act like, oh, well, she could have get confirmed. The reality is she was kind of, as far as her commissionership, was dead on arrival, and Gazelka was going to get rid of her because, let's face it, that's what he needs if he's going to do that gubernatorial campaign. He needs those moments. And now he's trying to act like we'll never know.
Right. And that is, that is so dishonest because it was, say it was rumored, it was like the worst kept secret in St. Paul that Laura Bishop would not have a job by the time this was done. And it's so disgusting. We talk about the big lie, right? Well, how about the big lie of climate change? And, there's now, she did an interview this afternoon where she said, and this kind of stuff has happened in a number of the budget bills, that they were not allowed to use the words climate change, environmental justice, or equity anywhere in the environment and natural resources bill. Because that's the mindset. And so here she is, she's fighting hard for clean cars. She did the thing with TCE ban up in, because of the events in White Bear Lake. I'm here in the East Metro where we've been dealing with PFAS and the cleanup, and she and Commissioner Stroman have led that process very effectively with tremendous community engagement as we go through and try to figure out how we're going to live with this situation out here. She has done the job. And no, they didn't agree with everything, but what do you think when you totally deny that climate change is happening when, hello, turn on the news.
Yeah.
Half of our continent has been on fire for the past few weeks. It's absolutely unbelievable that this is what, the way they handle this. And I think you're exactly right. I think by the time the final budget was done, I know Senator Gazelka was taking a whole bunch of criticism for not having gotten everything he wanted, which, in a divided legislature, that's just not going to happen. And so it's like he had something to prove. And we also know he really, like you said about the emergency powers and different things, he really likes to get credit for things. Mm-hmm. And it makes him very
pathetic.
Unhappy.
Well,
he doesn't get credit.
I'll say the word pathetic. You can say unhappy. I'll say pathetic. It makes him pathetic. But I've seen a lot of pathetic between him and Kurt Dowd. It's been patheticville. I do want to mention two things here. First of all, Peter Tester, governor has nominated him as the temporary head of the MPCA. That just happened. Also, the commissioner that was approved, the male commissioner that was approved, Phillips at the IIRB, he has been approved. My guess is now that the MPCA has a male commissioner, I don't know how Paul Gazelka will feel about that. But where are we at today? There wasn't an action. Was there a vote on Ho and Stroman? I don't believe there was, correct?
Yeah, because these are not – because we're in special session and the committees don't officially exist during the special session. It was just an informational hearing. As you said, Senator Rood expressed her support. Senator Draheim was a little more nuanced, but – so what we think is going to happen tomorrow is that the third guy who's on the Board of Animal Health will be coming up for a vote. And we think that Commissioner Stroman will be coming up for a vote, which we have every reason to believe that that won't be a problem. We think that they're just not going to bring the confirmation of Commissioner Ho to the floor, which, that's that fits in with their sort of let's wait till September conversation. And so that way, you know, it just won't come to a vote, which is better than the alternative.
We do have, it looks like, at least a dozen other commissioners that haven't been mentioned yet that haven't been confirmed. You know, Mueller over in education, you have Arnold in commerce, various others, Met Council and Zeal. You know, you've got these other ones. I mean, has Gazelka given you any timeline as to, A, when this, you know, kind of, you know, modified special session is going to end, or if they're going to touch on any other commissioners after these commissioners that they've already brought up?
I haven't heard anything, and that's what's so frustrating about this. If you're going to do this through informational hearings, as you just did, you can do that any day of the year. You don't need to be in special session to have those informational hearings. And then you have those hearings, you do what you need to do. I mean, let's be clear, the Commissioner Phillips with the IRRRB, he actually had a hearing back in February, and they sat on it. They could have brought that to the floor any day in February, March, April, May, but they chose not to. Wow. And so, you know, this is not how to govern. This is using this as a weapon. And so they are keeping some of the weapons in their holsters and bringing them out when they need to, MnDOT, that's another big one. Department of Health, Department of Human Services, also very big ones. I mean, there are some significant positions, folks who are doing incredibly hard work, and they're just letting them sit there to whip them out when they think it suits their purposes, which is not how this is. This is playing with our politics.
Well, yeah.
This is using our leadership of our agencies in this incredible time. You know, I mean, when you think about the work that Jan Malcolm has done, the work that Steve Grove has done over at Deed with unemployment insurance and jobs and getting out all those grants to small businesses around the state of Minnesota. I mean, you know, this has been heroic, and this is the game that they're playing with them. And it's despicable.
They think that they have a bazooka. The reality is they have a water pistol that's empty. The reality, too, is I want to just ask one other question here. Obviously, Bishop was a major target. She resigned before they could, and Gazelka seems very upset about that. But the reality is, are there any other commissioners? I mean, we talked about Hull a little bit, but are there any other commissioners that you see that the Republicans have put a target on? They're saying that there's no way that they're going to make it too much longer as a commissioner?
You know, they've come back and forth on some of them. Like, we've heard Commissioner Malcolm come up over the past year since this started last summer, which is just outrageous, you know, because of her leadership. She is so highly respected nationally for her leadership and her knowledge and everything and her experience when it comes to public health. But Senator Benson on the floor on Friday said that she was not on anywhere. So that was reassuring. We've heard Steve Grove's name come up at different times. I know that things got contentious with Senator Roger Chamberlain, who is the education chair, during those negotiations for the budget. Commissioner Mueller hasn't been on the job very long, just a few months. And I think I lose kind of track of time, as you can imagine, this year. And so, while all these other people are not being confirmed, that if she's bubbling up on a list, that's really frustrating, you know, and that just goes to, I think that speaks more about Senator Chamberlain.
Oh, I think, once again, I could use my own words, but I'll just go, hey, you know, I appreciate you being there. It's you're herding cats with this clown car brigade, and it just is. I appreciate you. You're trying to keep track of it. You're right. This isn't effective government. This is basically one senator trying to desperately create a campaign for the gubernatorial race. Is he gets beat by another Republican on the early front there, and he's doing it in the most destructive way. And once again, this just hurts Minnesota, as you mentioned. Not only we're losing commissioners, we're losing taxpayer dollars, but he's trying desperately to make the government not work so that he can make an argument that, you see the government I broke? Well, put me in place and I'll try to fix it. And you and I can talk all day long about last November and Paul Gazelka and leadership when it came to coronavirus, for goodness sakes. Ugh. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah. I appreciate what you're doing, and I sure do appreciate the time. I'll check in with you tomorrow and see how things are going. Hopefully this is some sanity comes back into him before too much longer, and you guys can get out of St. Paul before too much longer.
Well, I think, you know, the pressure, they were reminded that that didn't go well for them last summer. You know, it's like you touch the hot stove, you learn the lesson, and you forget, and then you touch the hot stove again. They realized this was probably not going to go well for them, I think. Mm-hmm. So I'm not taking anything for granted. Our caucus will be there to debate and defend our commissioners and the governor's agenda, and DFL values and priorities. You know, I'm hopeful that we will adjourn sine die at a reasonable hour tomorrow, and this chapter will be over.
Senator Susan Kent is the minority leader in the Minnesota Senate. Senator, thank you very much. I appreciate the time. Thank you for the input today. I really do appreciate it.
Absolutely, Matt. Anytime. It's great talking to you.
Take care. Senator Susan Kent, we'll spotlight her interview as well. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950. I think Senator Kent brought up a really good point that there's a lot of people that the people that choose who the Republican nominees are for their races are the most far right extremist loon balls in the party. And Jensen, as much as Jensen is a clown and he's killed, I'm sorry, I think there's a very good chance Scott Jensen could win the gubernatorial nomination for the Republican Party. He's got no chance at winning the statewide race because I want to see him back away from these vaccines are killing us all in a state where 70% of us are vaccinated and you're going to sell that. Good luck. Yeah, you're going to be really welcome with open arms down in Rochester. Wow. Anyway, but you see, these are the people, and don't fool yourself. I have heard from Republicans that Eric Mortensen contingent, that far right group that showed up saying no compromise ever, that scares the daylights out of these Republicans. Because there is an element of the Republican Party that is that 1/6 kind of Republican who want Gazelka and the whole crew to bring bats into the Senate. And then if a senator speaks out of line, they start clubbing them. That's what they want. They think that's leadership. Make them do what you want to. And as much as, and I mean, we can talk about the police and public safety bill. That definitely the Democrats came on the wrong side of that. The fact that there were some other things, the Refinery Act. There are other issues that I was really kind of bothered by the fact that the Republican Senate seems to be okay with Nazi cops. Okay, whatever. But the reality is the Democrats got a lot of things out of these bills, a lot of things. I mean, for the Republicans, they got the tax bill and they were able to water down the police restrictions. But that was pretty much all they got. And pretty much almost every one of those other bills, I would say, was a Democrat DFL win. So now you've got him, Gazelka, desperately trying to find some way he can sell himself. And he was going to get rid of Walls. I'm going to strip him of his emergency. Oh, he's going to rescind him himself. So that became that pathetic thing we talked about on Thursday last week where he's saying, no, we voted him out. We did. No, he just, I got the federal money. You guys can take care of it. I'm done. And he walked away. And so then it became, well, we're going to get these commissioners. But then he doesn't have the optics to look and say, okay, you're going to fire the three female commissioners and let the three male candidates go forward. Wow. Well, good luck when you torpedo the entire Republican Party in the tertiary suburbs because you're not going to win statewide squat after that. So there does seem to be an element here, but nothing, if I can point this out, Patrick, nothing will stop head executioner Paul Gazelka.
Bring out your dead.
Hey, Senator Gazelka, if you didn't make it so easy, man, it wouldn't be so damn fun. 952-946-6205. Oh, Monty Python, is there nothing you can't do? 952-946-6205. Some other subjects when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I loved Gazelka and Goonies, man. Hey, you guys! Yeah. Just quality acting right there. Baby Ruth. 952-946-6205. I want to give an update on a personal story I've been talking about, and this had to do with my religion. Now, once again, you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do, okay? Okay. I'm Catholic, or I was Catholic. My wife and I, after the decision by the U.S. Catholic bishops to weaponize the Catholic Church against Joe Biden specifically, decided enough is enough. I'm tired of this game, and we'd had enough. Now, I will mention, I don't play the unbelievable scandals that have been happening within the Catholic Church, whether that's the child sex scandal here, the atrocious scandal in Canada, my God, which, can I point out something, is just the latest case of something like that happening where a religious organization was attached. And it's not just in Canada, the United States. The stories you hear of centuries of abuse in Europe, it's hard. It's very hard. And people have asked me, it's like, okay, Matt, okay, why did the U.S. Catholic bishops, was that the cause? Why wasn't the child sex scandal? Why didn't you leave the church at that point? And that's a fair question. I think for us, we had talked to our priest at the point, and it became one of those things where there was nothing in our church, and just the way our church. And I want to be very clear about this. As I have made this decision, as my wife and I have made this decision that our family is leaving the Catholic faith, that the decision to do so doesn't have anything. We love our church. We love our church. I love the priests that we've had. They have been wonderful, wonderful. It's the same church we got married in, the same church our kids got baptized in. Kids have been confirmed in this. We love our church. We love our priests. And I'm going to be honest. I really love being Catholic. I do. And I know that you might not like that. I'm just talking about my religious faith. I'm not endorsing anything that the bad things of this thing, but just my personal faith, which that is what religion is, whether you have it or not within your system. However you do celebrate your religion, it's a personal decision. I liked being Catholic. But this idea that all these bishops say, okay, no, they're thumbing their nose at Francis. Once again, Francis has got a mixed bag of a record himself, but he's actually doing better than most popes have. And basically having taken the side of Donald Trump and the Republicans, while that political party doesn't just talk about, ignore abortion. You know how Republicans like to call Democrats cafeteria Catholics? Tell me a Republican today that follows the Gospel of Matthew. That's one of the four major books of the Bible that tells the story of Jesus and his story. A book that tells you how Catholics or Christians became Christian. Most Republicans completely ignore the Gospel of Matthew. And yet I don't ever hear any of these conservative U.S. Catholic bishops who are more concerned about political power ever criticize the dismissal of one of the major four Gospels, for goodness sakes, with any kind of intensity or determination that they are going after Joe Biden. And when they went after Joe Biden, they said, oh, wait, we're going to vote that unless if you're a – and I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit. I'll be very honest. They came out with a mixed message. They themselves, when they made this decision, came out with a very mixed message. They kept saying this is not political. We're just making a statement about politicians overall. But then the same bishops would run outside, get in front of the news cameras and say, my parishioners are all screaming about Joe Biden killing babies. And then they'd run back in and say, hey, who said anything about Joe Biden? It was clear what this was coming from. And frankly, the Catholic, U.S. Catholic bishops, they should have had the guts at that point to step aside and say, okay, guys, you shouldn't have gone out to the media and said Joe Biden's name. Because now you've attached this to a specific politician. And because you've attached this to a specific politician, now we're going to have to pull this off the table because we don't want this attached to a specific politician. Instead, they went forward with it and tried to say, you see all the stuff they're saying in the media? Ignore that. No, this is neutral. And the reality was it was about Joe Biden. And once again, nothing from the U.S. Catholic bishops about any Republican who gleefully ignores the Gospel of Matthew. Nothing. They're perfectly okay with that because power. It is. I'm calling it as I see it. That's at least how I see it. So it's been very frustrating to watch this, and we just had enough. I'm not going to be part of any religious organization that's trying to tell me how to vote, what my politics should be. And I've been flummoxed by what they think they're doing. I've actually talked to quite a few priests, actually, about this, and the impact has been immediate, especially in some areas. I have one listener who actually got in touch is in Los Angeles. They said in their area, it's like 92% voted for Biden. They're saying the Catholic Church there has already seen a pretty big decrease in the amount of people attending. And that means your money, too. But I'm sure all those Republican conservatives will double their tithe every week. Huh? There you go. I don't think that's going to happen. Who are you bringing into this church? When you push all these people out of the church, are you thinking, what, Baptists or Methodists or atheists are all going to just all of a sudden say, you know what? Hey, they're basically telling me how to vote. Well, I guess I'll be Catholic now. I mean, that's not going to work. This was a short-term, short-sighted idea for personal political gain for the bishops over the Catholic Church as a whole. And that was enough for us. So it is one of those things where this decision has been made, and we're actually I'm going to meet with my priest and have a cup of coffee with him and talk about it because he deserves to hear it from my face, and I have no problem doing that. Fast forward to the story here because this is why I'm bringing this up again. This is from I believe it was on Saturday. The decision of the U.S. Catholic bishops to draft a new document on communion, a move rooted in distress over President Joe Biden's abortion rights stance, continues to stoke a heated national debate that most Minnesota bishops apparently want to steer clear of. Oh, now you do? Oh, really? Uh-oh. It's a profile in cowardice, kids. When asked how they voted and why, just two of Minnesota's six Catholic bishops offered public disclosure. St. Cloud Bishop Donald Kettler voted to draft the document, and Crookston Bishop Richard Pates voted against it. St. Paul, Minneapolis Archbishop Bernard Hebda was among those who declined to disclose how and why he voted. Now, thank you very much to the Crookston Bishop. I appreciate your candor there and understanding where this was really coming from. St. Cloud Bishop Donald Kettler, I would ask you, where's your stance on the absolute destruction of the Gospel of Matthew by the Republican Party? Because that would seem like a far larger violation of the Christian faith and the Catholic faith than what Joe Biden has done. But you seem pretty quiet about that. You don't want to talk too much about that. You remember that Welcome in Strangers from Strange Lands? Can you show me in your Gospel of Matthew where it says Mexico is paying for the wall? Because I don't see that in there. If you were at least consistent, I still might not agree with you, but I at least have a little respect for you, Bishop. You're not consistent. Let's just be honest about that. This is political. But I want to actually bring up Archbishop Hebda. I have seen Archbishop Hebda speak, perform a service twice. I've enjoyed it. I thought it was a very nice service. I never got any kind of strong political vibe one way or the other when I was watching his service. I never did. But the fact that he doesn't want to talk about how he voted. Well, first, I think you let the cat out of the bag. I mean, if I can be honest with you, here is why this is spineless, sir. If I can be honest, if I may, this is why this is spineless. If this really is church doctrine, well, then own it. Walk out in front of that magnificent cathedral and go out there and say, yeah, I voted for this. The reason you're not is because you know your diocese. You know exactly who is in this town. It is a very liberal town. And you know that you might pick up a handful of people in some tertiary suburban congregation. but you'll lose a lot of people and a lot of donations. And so now all of a sudden, you want to be mum. But you're the leader of a church, for goodness sakes. You need to show your leadership. This desire for anonymity doesn't really exist for you in my book. If this truly is about church doctrine, then go on out there and admit it. Don't all of a sudden become mute and say, oh, well, I can't say anything about this. You're trying to play both sides of the coin, sir. And it doesn't work that way. Have the guts to admit what you did and live with the consequences. And if you believe you are following church doctrine and your decision in turn has a third to a half of the Catholics in this town stop going to church, well, then you can feel good that you at least followed the doctrine. But don't try all this like, well, now all of a sudden I'm concerned about the Gospel of Matthew and we're going to talk about immigrants' rights and all this stuff, because that's one of the things the Catholic bishops, if you looked at their Twitter feed, oh, all of a sudden they're trying to find the guy again. I don't see you saying, hey, Donald Trump, your anti-Christian caboose cannot come into our church. When you do that, I will respect you. When you have consistency, I might respect you a little bit. I might not respect the opinion, but at least I'll respect you as a person. But this wishy-washiness, I want to hide, I want to be seen. I want to hide, I want to be seen. For goodness sakes, stop it. Just stop it. You've made your bed. Now it's time to sleep in it. Come on out and tell us how you voted. And live with the consequences, because the reason you voted this way is because you thought this is what the gospel told you to do. Don't all of a sudden start hiding and saying, I'm being cheeky. No. How dare you guys do this to a religion that's supposed to be based on peace and love and understanding? And once again, don't try to tell me this wasn't about Joe Biden. Babies in cages. Cutting of food aid. The fight against the Affordable Care Act, which isn't even a great medical bill in the first place. You constantly have snuggled up to far-right ideologies that go against the direct teachings of Jesus, and you want to act as if somehow that's okay. But Joe Biden, you guys just got too excited. You've damaged your church. And you're now trying to frantically find some way to win in a game where you're going to lose, and you're going to lose badly. And act as if you still have some moral high ground. Frankly, I think most of you should resign. And if you did, maybe I'd think about staying a Catholic. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I just brought that. I wanted to bring that up because, my God, when I saw that, oh, we have to have anonymity. These bishops don't now want to. Now all of a sudden they want to be quiet. Oh, I see how this goes. Yeah, not exactly a profile in courage, is it? 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Like I said, I go on the truth is I don't really feel comfortable sometimes when I talk about this stuff about the Catholics. And as a Catholic myself, as a person who loves my church, I love being Catholic. I love the priests. But this is just, it reminds me of when Neinsted was there. And I was really, back in that whole thing, when I was taking on Neinsted and the gay marriage fight, I remember how uncomfortable I felt. I was like, because it doesn't feel like, how am I the moral compass of the Catholic Church? It doesn't make any damn sense to me, if you want to know the truth. This doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And by the sounds of it, and I want to be honest, once again, it sounds like this is not just unique to me. This sounds like nationwide, the damage has been done here. And now I'm going to be interested to see if the Catholic bishops actually follow through on this. I wonder if after 3 months and all of a sudden they've seen a dramatic decrease in attendance and donations, all of a sudden they say, you know what? We decided we're going to pass on this. We decided we need to table this idea. Well, damage is done. 952-946-6205. Speaking of which, damage is done. Today is the six-month anniversary to the nightmarish attack on our U.S. Capitol. The attack that was in it was encouraged by Donald Trump. It was encouraged by Republicans across the board for months that they were going to do this because they had lost. They had lost fair and square. Republicans, Donald Trump lost the 2020 election fair and square. And outside of Obama beating McCain, it was the second biggest kickdown in a presidential election since then. Biden won fair and square. But it didn't stop you because you are more committed to your golden idol than you are to this country. And so you basically fanned the flames of fraud. You got them there on 1-6. You got them riled up and you pointed them at the Capitol. They broke in. They attacked cops. People died. They were going to hang Mike Pence. They were going to try to kill AOC and many others, including Ilhan Omar. You clearly had chaos ensue because of Republicans who were trying to overthrow a legitimate election, which is overthrowing democracy, overthrowing the government. And I said this then, I say it today. If you would have done that, there is no way you ever are able to walk it back. And just because the people that did this are too stupid to realize what they were about to do, or maybe they didn't know what they were going to do and they just wanted to install a fascist dictator regime in this country, which would have been happened if Trump was installed as president. Regardless of the case, I want to make sure because right now Republicans and the right are doing everything in their power to make it seem like what happened on 1-6 was normal. It wasn't. It will never be normal. It was an attack on our country. These people are the Confederates. These people are the Nazis. These people are our enemies, and they should be arrested and jailed. And there being some benevolence, I'm actually not too comfortable with. Some of these people that just walked in the building and walked out, they're kind of letting go with, you know, basically community service. I'm not comfortable with that. This was an attack on democracy by the president, his White House, and numerous politicians within the Republican Party. And it's time to stop trying to kick around the problem here. Arrest the traitors. Bless the United States. 6 months ago, we almost lost this country because the stupidest people on the planet were pointed towards the Capitol and they said attack. And they said, yeah, attack. I mean, and they still today, we didn't bring weapons, batons and brooms and shovels and bear spray. You brought tons of weapons. You went in there to attack. Arrest them all. I don't care if they're a sitting congressman. I don't care if they're a sitting senator. Arrest them. Put them up for treason and lock their asses up forever. How dare they try to pull this stunt? And I want everyone listening to me tonight to post that. 6 months later, arrest the traitors. And bless the United States of America. Although we are flawed. We got a lot of things we got to work out. But if we keep saying we'll do it, we're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.